RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Time for our Money Talks here at RCR every Thursday morning. And Joel Robinson, financial advisor, Wellington-based, director of Radical Investment, is back with us. Joel joined us for the first time right at the end of July, and he's back now. Joel, welcome back to RCR. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Paul. Obviously, wasn't offensive enough to not get invited back.
No, no, you you somehow qualified for a comeback. We talked about KiwiSaver last time we talked, and there was quite a bit of incoming feedback on that, so that was cool. So this time round, we're going to talk about budgeting, and if you're talking to the right person on that, maybe you can use me as sort of like a line in the sand. But I'm curious to start off with, and I know it's been around for a bit, but it's kind of the first I've heard about it, and I've read up about it a bit in anticipation for our chat. Zero-based budgeting. Is it like it sounds?
Effectively, yes. So it's kind of, I guess unsurprisingly, it was a method arguably developed by an accountant. It kind of sort of reeks of accountancy, the whole name, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But basically, the idea behind it is that no dollar is left unplanned. That there is, it's like absolute control over your money and where your money's going. And so, the cash flow statement at the end of the pay cycle effectively reads zero. That doesn't mean you spend it all, but it means it's all allocated to different places.
Down to every dollar.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends how much time you want to spend. The way that some people approach it is to be very, very granular with it. The same article that you read, it was fascinating, talking about a Brit, a young Brit, who's basically does all of the budget allocation live every pay cycle on TikTok.
And people
are surprisingly really tuning into that to see how she's, very granularly allocating her money. So, yeah, you can go for the really granular, right down to the dollar approach, or you can be very a little bit more broad with it. But yeah, the idea behind it is that based on when the money's coming in, you are then deciding exactly what you're going to do with that money. So how much is being put aside for the bills that have to be paid, how much is going aside for the discretionary stuff, and how much basically is being put aside into savings to either help protect against some of the unexpected costs that come up, or to be saving or investing towards the future. Ideally, you have the ability to do that. But obviously, times are fairly tight in New Zealand, and I've certainly seen it for a number of households, especially in good old Wellington, the significant public sector. So, yeah, it's quite topical for what's going on, what people out there in New Zealand are dealing with in reality.
So, based on your experience, what you do, how do people normally budget? I can tell you how I budget. I kind of know what I have to come up with every month.
Yep.
And I try and be disciplined to a certain extent in what I spend. And, I like to have a bit of a buffer. But I don't go down to the last dollar. Yeah. I'm not granular, as you say.
And very few people are. It's not my perspective that everyone needs to go to that level of granularity. But if you're finding that you're going backwards and you're going into debt, then, really that's a good place to start, is get granular and know exactly where your money's going. Most people don't really have much of a budget. They kind of do things by default. And as a result, they kind of end up not really putting that much aside. Often the excess is spent on discretionary stuff. That could be down at Mitre 10. For me, that's probably would be an area of temptation to spend. I love doing some work in the garden. There's always improvements that you can see.
Yeah, tools and things.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. There's so many great tools out there. And I'm not much of a DIY guy, but still, it's part of the DNA. It could be cafes. Is certainly another common area of overspend. The common conversation I have or what I hear is, we don't spend, we're not sort of spending abnormally, are we? And the truth is, no, that you're not, but it's because a lot of people out there are doing the same thing and that they're not really aware of where the money's going. And it's being frittered away.
Yeah, think about it. A scone and a coffee is about $12.
Yep.
Maybe 13. Do that every day and then add it up over a month.
Yep.
And, you know, you're burning through some dollars.
Yeah, it's about $260 just some quick maths over 4 weeks. Yeah.
And what do you get really for it?
Yeah, exactly. It can be, and so that's also a really key point you've raised there. What do you get for it? And that's I think an important people understand what the habits are behind the spending, because sometimes we just look at the spending itself and think that's the issue, but actually it's a habit that drives that. So one really good example I'd heard of this was a financial advisor who was working with a client, and that when they got down to the details of it, they realized the reason this person was actually spending so much on coffee wasn't actually anything to do with the coffee. It was an opportunity for them to go out and actually have a conversation with a particular person that they wanted to have a conversation with. And so that was actually the root behind it, not an addiction to coffee. And so, if you come from a perspective of, that focus on the outcome rather than the thing driving it, then you actually don't end up creating change necessarily. You can just end up sort of punishing yourself for the wrong reason.
I mean, the experience of that conversation, the interaction might actually be worth it. But if you're doing it on your own, I don't know if that would be worth it.
Yeah. But then it's also like, the other ways that you and that person can even mutually agree to catch up in some other, in some other way. And maybe that's an awkward conversation for that person to have, but, that's potentially a $260 a month, conversation. Yeah. Is it worth, what's that, about $3,000 a year? Is it worth, having that, what might be a slightly awkward conversation to save $3,000 a year?
Yeah, and adding it up at the end of the year, see if you got $3,000's worth of conversational value out of it. Yeah.
That's maybe a bit of a callous way to,
account to for measure it. Sorry, we can't do lunch anymore. The value's not there, or something like that.
The lunch at the park.
With the thermos flask brought from home.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so it seems though that, I mean, talking about the case here out of the Guardian article we're referring to, and the woman on TikTok,
yes,
got quite a following there. And there seems now to be that's spreading out. The banks are getting interested. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I think, banks are always looking to try and develop tools to keep people around as customers, keep people using their product, to one up others. The financial institution, especially a large one, they're very much focused on sort of all these small value adds to keep people around and keep people as clients. So it's not surprising that they're looking at that. But this is the sort of thing that there is a lot of free resources out there, and even just a simple spreadsheet, which is what this simple Excel sheet. You can use Google Sheets for free. Plug it into there and away you go. Not everyone needs to go to that level of granularity, but you can kind of have a bit of a make way between the two of it. And that's often what I encourage people to implement. And it really stems from the classic envelope system, which, I think some people listening will be familiar from the past, when you're paid in cash and you'd put the money aside into different envelopes for different things. The modern equivalent of that, really, or the bucket system, because yes, you can go to the level of kind of restarting each week. This is what I got this week. This is what I'm going to put aside here. But the reality is there are a lot of things in our life that are pretty repetitive. The mortgage amount or the rent, rates increasing as they are, somewhat, predictable as to what they'll be. At least, after you've been given your latest increase in
your rates. Someone told us in, I think it was Hawke's Bay, that their rates had gone up 42%.
Barat.
I mean, crazy. So, that little bucket has to have more in it now.
Yeah.
What about analyzing who you're actually doing business with, because you'll have utilities, you'll be going to supermarkets. I mean, for example, I moved down to the Queenstown area, and they tell me that it's really just located here and not much further out from here. But supermarket prices are noticeably cheaper. You notice it kind of immediately, you know.
It's cheaper in Queenstown than Wellington.
Yeah, totally. And I'm told that that's because of the mix of people here and the tourist trade, and there's something in that, though I haven't drilled into it. I guess my point is, though, you really notice it. What I'm getting to is, if you're going to be being granular in your approach, you really need to analyze who you're doing business with, right, and seek out, really make a point of seeking out the best deals. Yeah. You probably find better deals, right?
Well, definitely. And we just recently went through this with our power, you know, analyzing power prices and concern over where they're headed and gas reserves in New Zealand. That's a longer conversation and potentially a good one. But, you know, there's no real incentive to stay with a company long-term, unfortunately. You know, people are very familiar with this, but really gone are the days of being rewarded for loyalty, unfortunately, for most of those sorts of businesses. And yeah, really worthwhile thing to look into for those that are struggling to create some extra cash flow is, you know, when was the last time you reviewed what you're doing with your power? Often providers will pay, you know, some sort of incentive for you to agree to a 12-month term. As soon as that 12-month term comes up, the first thing I'll be doing is looking at what are the other options available and who's going to then give me the next best offer, because
because there is no loyalty.
No, there isn't. And the cost and frustrations or the time spent in switching is a lot less these days than it would have been historically. It was I'm surprised there's not more of these people around, but I came across a power broker in Auckland, a guy who essentially is kind of like a financial advisor for working with power companies. And what he did is actually looked at what our power usage is based on the smart meter, looked at what the deals were available in our specific area, and made a recommendation of a power company to switch to, which was, we ended up moving to Genesis. It was the best option. And, you know, they additionally paid, you know, a $200 moving credit. And so, you know, doing that every 12 months does make a difference. It is worth the effort. Internet's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Remember when we first moved in here, Skinny gave us 6 months of free internet for only 12-month term. So I think they were regretting that one.
Well, I'm wondering if people are going to catch on like I have. Speaking of internet, I had an account with one of the providers, and it was, you know, optical fiber connection. I guess you call that a landline connection. Since I moved, and I don't want to make this about me, you know, but I think I'm an example. I'm just using, I've just upgraded my plan to unlimited data mobile. And obviously you have to be in an area where the connectivity's there, but that's most places now. And for just probably about $25 extra a month, I can now dispense with my $75 landline. I have no perceivable drop off in data speed or connectivity with my home devices, and I've sort of consolidated everything into this one thing. The reliability is fantastic. I wondered about that at first, but it's turned out to be fantastic. So now I'm $75 better off almost a month, and nothing's changed essentially.
Yeah, it's almost $1,000 a year just for,
there you go, yeah,
something simple.
Aren't I good?
Yeah, that's very well done. Yeah, and I think that it's an interesting one, and it's a similar analogy to like with the landline phone. You know, many people for many years still had the landline even though they weren't really using it, and were still effectively paying for it. And it's a similar kind of thing again, right? Like if you don't really need that hardwired connection into the ground, then actually, you know, potentially you can just do away with it and just use your mobile phone and hotspot that to your laptops, and away you go.
Yeah, we can do multiple. Maybe a big family would struggle with bandwidth. I get that. But one or two, no problem. Mm. Do you think, because we never got any financial education when I was at school, Joel, none. It was like, good luck.
It was virtually the same for me, unfortunately.
Okay, well, that's not, you know, I'm way ahead of you probably on the timeline. But isn't it about time then? I know we're sort of moving out a bit from, you know, basic budgeting and what we started talking about. But isn't it about time that became part of a mainstream education? Because debt gets people into a lot of trouble.
It
can really be a drag on life. It can destroy relationships. There's a whole lot of really bad consequences that could come. And we could be ahead of that, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not super au fait with what's going on financial education literacy-wise in schools.
Neither am I.
From talking with others, it seems like there's still, like talking with others that have kids in schools, it still seems like there's quite a lack in that area. I'm not sure whether it's just a lack of time for teachers to delve into that, but yeah, there is so much more importance for young people to get an understanding of how money works and what is money, and to be prepared for life, rather than, I don't know, some subjects that we do at school, which end up having virtually no use to us once we leave.
And sex education, I'm thinking, could donate a few hours to money education.
I'm thinking of classics for me. That is somewhat useless for some that, you know, go down the history path. Maybe it's more useful, but yeah, there's definitely some work to be done there. I think, and this is actually going back slightly into KiwiSaver, I think KiwiSaver additionally could be a very good vehicle for that. And one of the biggest things that I think needs to be looked at changing is having government contributions for under 18s, because then you have, you know, imagine for someone in school that's even got a few thousand dollars in KiwiSaver, because Nan and Grandad have contributed some Christmas money in there for, you know, 10 straight years. The level of interest for someone under 18 just to learn more about money, because it's more real to them then, you know, it's not just talking about money which they don't have and don't understand and is not relevant because it's not theirs, versus, you know, if there is money that's there that they own, I think just the desire for a young person to actually learn more about it will be there that much more. And it flows on to every other area of finance, like budgeting and power bills and the like.
I'm thinking zero-based budgeting could be a good foundation for that, because then it does focus on every dollar, right?
Yeah.
And allocates it. It doesn't mean that you don't have any disposable. You just know how much disposable you have, and it kind of creates a discipline to stay within. And you, if you're doing it right, and your overheads aren't too high, and the cost of living squeeze puts pressure on that. But you know, you will see your savings and your rainy day fund accumulating, and you won't miss out on your disposable items. And, you know, that would be quite a good basis for it, I would have thought, even though it's a bit, like we say, granular again, you know.
Mm. Yeah, totally. I do want to also pick up on a point you mentioned there about the reserve fund side of things, because I think for a lot of people out there, they see in tough times that the kind of ultimate goal is just to sort of get by as much as possible and not go into debt. And that's good. That's a good start point. Going into debt is, like you said, can be destructive in all sorts of areas and can be a real bind, in a perpetual bind. But likewise, you know, having a reserve fund is the thing that prevents people from actually going into debt in the first place. And often when we do something like zero-based budgeting, we can be quite good at looking at what's kind of immediately on the horizon, like over the next week, 2 weeks, month, etc. But we actually aren't so good when it comes to thinking about those one-off type things that could happen, you know, in a year's time or 2 years, and they can be the large expenses, like the car breaks down,
like replacing the roof. Yeah.
Yep, replacing the roof, replacing.
I got hit with that once. Whiteware. I can tell you. Yeah, I got hit with a roof replacement once, and it was a shocker. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not any cheaper now, I can tell you that.
No, I can bet. Yeah, it wasn't even the full roof, it was just a bit of it. Okay, yeah. So that's an interesting concept if people want to practice that method of budgeting, and And you can put it on TikTok as well. Do the local version.
Well, yeah, maybe you can make some extra money from the ad revenue from people tuning in to watch. Maybe maybe it's an avenue for you, Paul.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about it already. Maybe a little podcast. Out there. Okay, anything more you want to say about budgeting? Any tips that you can help our audience with? Many of them will be, in maybe later years and probably have been through all the bumps and the bangs that you get along the way, but not all. So if you've got any tips or any good things to keep in mind, let's hear them.
Yeah, so I think there is a classic, belief around the buying of bulk items as being a good way to save. The thing I'll say there is be careful on how the supermarket's actually pricing things. I have personally witnessed there is definitely gouging that is going on in supermarkets.
Oh, yeah.
The Commerce Commission announced an inquiry into, investigating what supermarkets are doing. My local Pack and Save was pricing the most expensive per unit quantity as being like very low, or whatever they call their sort of extra low, with the red, and you're like, oh yeah, that's the cheap one.
Yeah.
But it actually worked out to be the most expensive way to buy this item, and the smallest item, which was like the small pack, buying multiples of that was actually the most cheap way.
That's a bit cheeky.
Bulk. Yeah. And not only that, but next week, or it might have been a couple of weeks later, went back, the item that was labeled as extra low was no longer labeled as extra low, but was cheaper than when it was labeled as extra low, extra value. I actually put a post on LinkedIn about it because I was so incensed.
Is that a mistake or a psyop?
Well, it could be a mistake, but I saw it a second time, the exact same thing. And so, it'd be pretty negligent to not have the systems in place to check that that's not going on. Someone commented actually on the post I put on LinkedIn saying to build that sort of system to check it is actually a really simple thing. That was someone that had familiarity in that area. So I definitely think there's a bit of advantage being taken of people there. And it was for an item like baby wipes was the particular item.
Oh, and that's families. That's, yeah.
I think... because families are time poor, mums and dads are time poor. I mean, I'm a dad, speaking from experience here, and those that are listening will be able to relate.
Yep.
When you're at a supermarket, you want to try and do it as quick as possible. So yeah, just be careful on when buying in bulk. But cooking in bulk is definitely one of the simplest ways to try and save money. I mean, food is by far and away, the biggest area of expenditure outside of housing for a lot of people. And that's often where a lot of the extra spend goes into. And so if you can find ways to reduce that by taking lunch from home, the classic, and the way to do that is cooking in bulk, store it in the freezer, have lunches set for the week, and you can take it and go and don't have to think about it during the week. If you can put that in place. Yep.
That could be the difference between a dollar sandwich made at home or less and a $6 or $8 sandwich from wherever. There's a huge difference in the cost of producing that.
Well, the flow-on effect of that too is it can be the difference between being in debt and not being in debt.
Right.
Especially when you're talking about, like credit cards and personal loans. That's... We won't go down that route because that could also be quite a long – it's probably a whole chat in itself.
No, but the thing that comes to mind, you just mentioned credit cards. Do you think there'll ever be a day where the interest rate on credit cards will ever get to a more – less usury level, let's say, I'd put it that way?
Not likely under the current financial system that we have. Because it's priced – that these companies price it based on risk to them of that person defaulting.
It's a higher risk, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I personally hate credit cards. I had one client try and tell me that they were getting more in air points than they were paying in credit card fees. I got them to pull statements for the last 3 months. We went through the numbers and identified which was expenditure for you know, a one-off kind of yearly thing, and which was the more regular. And when we did the numbers, they were going to have to be spending about $450,000 a year to make up in air points for the fees that they were paying on their credit card annually.
Oh, wow.
And I think they, and so we mutually agreed that they would cut up the credit card.
Yeah, I've never really been attracted by things like air points. I was a Qantas frequent flyer once, but that's because I had a job overseas and I was going anyway. And, you know, got a reasonable number of, you know, short to medium range flights from it over about a 6-year period. But it seems like it's kind of an illusion that, you know, the rewards are really not really there.
Yeah, I mean, the US has a lot more competition in the reward space. So generally people get rewarded a bit more on the cashback side of things in the States than they do in New Zealand. We've got pretty paltry returns there. They can work for some people, but the thing with these schemes is you got to think about, you know, why do they exist? It's because for the company, more often than not, they're going to benefit from it more than the person making use of it. So if you do really have the discipline, yeah, that, you know, it can be worthwhile, but most people incorrectly assess their ability to have good discipline around these things and end up actually getting less benefit from it than they think. Because it's not just the fees paid. You could never be charged interest, but if as a result of having that card, you're actually spending more money than you would otherwise, you could not, you know, you could still be living within your means.
Chasing the points.
Yeah, chasing the points, but that you could actually be, you know, investing that money instead and actually, you know, getting a better return than some, you know, air points, which...
Or just buying a cheap airfare.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a question. Do wealthy people budget? Do they need to?
Most do. Yep. I guess, do they need to? Well, they've probably gotten, in most cases, to where they are because they've had some discipline with money. You certainly see that a lot in the property space, where people have been, you know, very fairly granular about how they've managed their money. I guess for anyone, the important thing is that you are living within your means. You're not spending more than you have. And so I guess once you get to a point where if your incomes exceed your expenses, you've got debt cleared, or at least personal debt cleared, and you've got enough assets and investments there to basically set you up for retirement, then yeah, I guess you get to a point where you don't need to have that level of you know, granularity. But for most people, those habits, you know, are ingrained. So yeah, well, wealthy people definitely do are still well, the truly wealthy. I've certainly had conversations with people that believe themselves to be wealthy. They're earning, you know, $250,000 plus, but actually, you know, they're not saving much, any of that money. And from prior work with people well into retirement, I've seen plenty of people that have a lot more money in retirement that were in very humble professions, earning very middle of the range incomes with a lot more money than those that were on, you know, decent six figure incomes. And it's purely down to their discipline with money during the working life.
If people want to find out more about what we were talking about at the start, zero-based budgeting, you can search it out. I've been looking at a Guardian article that Joel put a link through about, and I think it's quite an interesting thing. And I think maybe it should be, like I said before, though what do I know, part of some kind of education.
We'll have to campaign for it, Paul.
Yeah, that's the next big platform. You know, when times are tight, you know, attention is focused, it's sharper, isn't it? So people are thinking about this right now. If people want to get in touch with you, Joel, what's the best way to do it?
Radicalinvestment.co.nz.
All right. And even though it's a bit tight out there, there's still things, strategies that you can do that sort of buffer up against that.
Yeah, so absolutely. It's a combination of the different things that we've talked about, really, but applying it personally, because obviously not every single element of this is going to be relevant every person, but you know, many parts of it will be.
All right. Financial advisor, director of Radical Investment, Joel Robinson. Thanks for coming back on our Money Talks, Joel, and we'll talk in a few more weeks, I think.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. stay in the loop, visit realitycheck.radio/email.